Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Are you a young person wondering about what to do for a career? Maybe you have a young person in your life who is quizzing you as to what direction to take. Or perhaps they are trying to choose what HSC or university subjects they should take next year. Well, working out just what work might mean in the future isn't easy, nor is predicting what skills may be best suited to employers in a few years' time, let alone in the 2030s or 40s or 50s. But tonight, maybe we have a few clues for you. Such issues occupy the thoughts and the work of demographer Simon Kustenmacher. He's from the Demographics Group, and Simon joins us regularly to take us inside some of the stats and the trends that tell the story about who we are, how we're changing, and how to understand the increasing technological world all around us. And it's not only about maths and English. He's going to tell us that taking up a bit of drama might actually help you later in life as well. And I want to know, if you did do drama at school, has that made a difference? If maybe even if you didn't go into any sort of performance or theatre, but did it help you in some other aspect of your work life? Apparently, Simon says it could. And maybe you did drama and it worked out pretty well for you, even if you didn't go into theatre or the arts. Well, Simon's with me now. Simon, hello. Welcome to Nightlife.
Ah, great to be back.
Now, Simon, a demographer, is that what you always wanted to be? What did your teachers tell you that you should look at and study when you're at school?
I was very lost in high school and I had absolutely no idea what I should study, because I figured you must pick something that is useful in later in life. But I didn't find anything, so I just studied geography instead, because I thought it's kind of fun to look at maps. And that's what I've done in high school. My major in high school was geography, and that then turned, you know, years later into a university degree and then into a career, not with any specific planning, but by just following my general interests and hoping, praying that it will lead to some sort of professional life.
Yeah, well, it worked out well for you. So you've been looking at some of the trends regarding the shaping of the workforce. And what sort of trends are continuing that you're noticing, Simon?
I think one of the really, it's first and foremost, difficult to predict the future. But one of the things that we know for sure is that we will have more technology in our work life. More and more algorithms, more and more AI will shape the way that we work. So therefore, when you take this as a given, it is easy and forgivable for people to say, well, I better study a bit of maths, you know, all the STEM subjects. I better become a really good programmer to be ready for that world. And I would actually suggest the exact opposite. Of course, I am fully in favor of a broad education, that you're good in all subjects. But I'd say in a world where technology takes over, the remaining work tasks that stay with the individual worker are increasingly interpersonal in nature. Mm. If it becomes easier for you to create a map, to create an online report or something like this, then, you know, you'll still work full time. You will not work only part time. It never works this way. But the remaining time of your work will then be spent with interpersonal tasks. And those interpersonal tasks, it's really important. It always was important to harness those, but it is even more important now.
And Simon, when it comes to strengthening your interpersonal skills, what sort of subjects should you be studying then at school or university to boost those?
Well, I think if you are still in high school, the theatre, the drama classes are just the perfect example to get your skill sets up in a way that will really guide you in a positive way for decades on end. The drama class is the only class in high school that realistically resembles a working environment where you're working collaboratively with other people in a real environment. You need to sell tickets. You need to make sure that you have all the seats filled. You know, one person is doing the stage, one person is doing the light, somebody designs the flyers. It's really much more like a business environment compared to any English or algebra class.
All right. And do you think that most teachers and parents are aware of that? I mean, that they'd recommend drama for students to take up, even if they're preparing for a future tech world?
I think it's very underrated, the importance of drama. And remind yourselves that drama isn't like debating. Debating really forces you to win over somebody, you know, to defeat somebody. That's not what drama is. It is a truly collaborative environment where, you know, if you perform well, if the other people perform well, everybody wins. So it's much more like a business environment, the business cutthroat environment of, you know, of a Jack Welch, where you need to beat the competition. That is increasingly moving to the background as more and more businesses are interconnected, as there is so much B2B, business to business collaboration and transactions out there. So really, you don't need to be a great fighter to succeed in the future world of business. You need to be a great collaborator. You need to be able to work in a smart and kind and effective way with other people rather than against other people. And I do really believe the theater, the drama, offers you just these skills.
And Simon, it's interesting because you're recommending drama should be taken, considered more seriously. And we've got a message here from one listener. I taught drama for 20 years in a regional city and my students were fantastic. They were empathetic, motivated and all around great organisers, thinkers and performers. I totally agree that this is an area that students should study. I find this fascinating. So I did drama all through university and school myself, Simon, but then I went into performance. So I guess I've just assumed those skills are used in my everyday work. But now that you remind me, you talk about how I can communicate better, organize better, that's probably making sense. It is making sense. Is there drama taught at most schools these days?
I would say so. I'd say that every decent sized school offers some sort of drama classes, but every now and then it's just done on the side, you know, where the English teacher puts together a play. And then it's, you know, it's nice amateur effort, but even that, you know, it doesn't need to be perfect. You don't need to be the next Hollywood starring super actor. It doesn't need to be that way.
Yeah.
It's really just a matter of, it takes, if you are on stage, it takes away the fear of speaking in front of a crowd. And whatever your job is, whether you are an accountant, whether you are, you know, a business major at university, you will be spending an awful lot of time in your work life talking to other people, making a point, and all of these things. You know, they require that you're able to speak. They require that you are not afraid when you step up in front of an audience, be this, you know, 15 people in a boardroom or 1,000 people on stage.
All right. So drama, you're plugging as a great way to prepare people for the future workforce, Simon. So does that mean maths is what? Where does maths sit as a priority?
So the idea is I really follow a humanitarian, Alexander von Humboldt ideal of education, where you want to have a broad education in all subjects. So you definitely benefit in a world that is computer, that is tech heavy, from, you know, having good STEM skills, from, you know, knowing your maths. But the important thing is really you don't need to be a programmer. You don't need to be a maths genius. You need to be somewhat literate in maths, because this way, you know, the algorithms don't go over your head. You kind of understand what is possible and what isn't. It's quite shocking. And, you know, I also work as a consultant and I work with lots of businesses, lots of governments. And you quite often run into organizations that are run extremely simply. Mm. There's not much, computer AI magic happening in the background. It's just a couple of people kind of sort, they operate on gut feeling. And add a bit of, you know, strategic mathematical precision into your business, it benefits you, but you don't need to become the Uber programmer superstar.
All right. Jenny in Perth. Evening to you, Jenny.
Good evening.
Now, tell your daughter, is she doing drama?
She is, yes. She's in year 12, so she's doing ATAR drama.
And what's the reason she's taken up drama, Jenny? What sort of career does she want?
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's really refreshing to hear the conversation because she goes to a girls' school and I think she's felt comfortable to do drama and she's very sporty but chose to do drama and she's absolutely loved it. But she actually wants to focus on business. That's what she wants to do when she leaves school. And I just think, like the you're talking about, just promotes all those skills that she's going to need to collaborate, communicate, have that confidence, work through something, put yourself out there, take a risk. I've just seen that with her performances and, yeah, it's sort of, people have thought, wow, she's doing drama, you know, she's sporty and she wants to do business. That doesn't really make sense, but I can totally see it. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, that's interesting. And what about her peers? Is she one of the few that are doing drama, even though she's preparing for a different sort of career?
There's a few students doing drama, but they probably want to go into media or into drama or those sorts
some
of
sort
things.
Of performance. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. There you go. Well, your daughter's proving that, you know, what Simon's saying, you know, she's taking it up. So thanks a lot to Jenny for those comments. That's really interesting. Let's go to Steve. Let's go to, Stephen. Hello, Steve. How are you going?
Not bad. How are you all?
Very good. Thank you, Stephen. Now, Yes, carry on.
I just think you've got to ignore what happens at school. You've got to follow your own life. When I was at school, I failed senior maths and maths all during my life, and my teachers told me, oh, he'll never amount to anything. And years later, I've graduated out of university four times with honours and maths and et cetera, and I proved them all wrong.
Yeah?
It was just the environment that they set. They just concentrated on the kids they thought were smart, but it was the kids that came out from the depths that really set the standards.
There you go. And so maths was your thing, Steve?
Oh, look, I got honours and distinctions in maths, and at school never got it. But I went through the private school system where they classified you as either you were going to go on in the real life and be exceptional or you were going to be a tradie. And because you couldn't do maths, they classified you as low class.
Yeah. Well, well done, Stephen. Proved his teachers wrong there. Simon, that's interesting, the other comment from Jenny about her daughter doing drama, even though she's going to go into a different career. It may seem that people are taking that on board now.
It's always helpful. And of course, schools do just provide those structures. And then usually people don't go into drama class in year 11 or 12 because they have some sort of big career ambition. It's usually just, it sounds like a fun thing to do. You know, maybe you get out of another subject if you do this. And you kind of just experiment a bit and have a bit of fun. That's what this is about. We don't need to make you into a top actor. It's really, we need to make you comfortable being on stage. We need to train you to talk to other people, you know, just to communicate effectively. That's a brutally important skill in more and more jobs.
And the other thing, Simon, when it comes to preparing for your future career and what you're going to do when you enter the workforce, of course, incomes become something that people consider as well. And you've been looking at the changing patterns of incomes in the workplace. Now, we've gone, you say, from a bell curve shape to a U shape. How so?
Yeah, so, well, if you imagine the workforce, you might still imagine a beautiful bell curve, but sure, there are a couple of rich folks Sure, the couple of poor folks, but essentially everybody has a middle-class job, middle-class income, middle-class life. What you are thinking of here is Australia of the 1970s. That is not the... that's not true anymore. By now, the workforce much more resembles the letter U, where we have tons of rich folks, tons of highly uni-educated people with, you know, very safe, strong six-digit incomes. Mm. And we have more and more people on the so-called low and unskilled jobs, where you're being paid by the gig, by the kilometer, by the hour. These are jobs where it doesn't matter whether you have 1 year of work experience or 20 years of work experience. The only way to earn more money at the bottom end here is to work longer hours, to work yourself to death, to work a second job. And that's increasingly what we are seeing. Because if you look at the year leading up to the pandemic, the year leading up to February 2020, we added jobs on the bottom. We grew the bottom jobs by 4%. We grew the top jobs by 5%. But we hollowed out the workforce. We took 3% of the middle class jobs away. So we add on the edges and we dig deeper the hole of the middle class. So the middle class increasingly stops existing. And then, of course, during COVID, we added even more jobs to the top jobs. You know, this grew by 6%, the high income university educated jobs, because these were the jobs that could be done even if your city was in lockdown. So we continue adding those. But the bottom jobs, they lost 13%.
I'm chatting to Simon Kustenmaho, who's a demographer, about these changing income patterns. And Simon, that middle class jobs, what sort of jobs did we lose in that area?
The middle income jobs traditionally are tradie jobs, manufacturing worker jobs, you know, think warehouses, think factories, think self-employed tradies. Professional footballers are also qualified as skill level 3, but I don't think we lost any of those.
All right. And when you said that obviously this gig economy working group of the workforce is growing, we've seen it obviously in aspects of food delivery and parcel delivery, things like that. Where else is the gig economy, replicating jobs?
Well, the issue here with the gig economy is that, of course, some big players are thinking about how they can create a platform where they, provide a simple platform to lots of people that do cheap labor, and then they get money off it. And obviously, drivers, all those low-skilled jobs, people think of how can we do this in a platform? You know, how can we make sure that real estate inspections are done by, local workers. You know, people work on all kind of concepts where you take a simple task and put it on a platform, and then somebody who is locally around can log into the app and do that job for a couple of bucks. It's a nice way, a very honest way of earning a living, but it is extremely poorly paid. Therefore, it is not a career that you are not a job that you want as a career. It's perfectly fine if you do this job on a temporary basis, if you just need to make ends meet temporarily or while you study. But these jobs are not leading anywhere. These jobs, even if you hold those jobs for 40 to 50 years, you will be unlikely to have enough money in your superannuation account at the end of your working life to have a decent retirement. It is shocking how we hollow the workforce out.
Yes, and make it so precarious, their livelihoods. Simon, is there a way of protecting yourself against falling into the gig economy? Because a lot of these people came from other more solid work and then ended up there.
And again, if this is a temporary solution because your job due to COVID wasn't allowed to operate and you found some sort of job that's perfect, that is just the kind of, ingenuity and, forwardness of the workforce that we want, that's fantastic. In how you protect yourself from all types of financial problems in Australia is quite simply education. The higher educated you are, statistically speaking, the more money you make. There are, of course, a couple of plumbers on 180,000 bucks who earn twice as much as a kindergarten teacher, who has a university degree.
Yeah.
But overall, statistically speaking, looking at the workforce of 13 million people, education pays off big time.
Yeah. And that's been a real struggle, hasn't it, of the last couple of years, of kids trying to complete their studies, their high school, with all the ructions that they've had to get through. And then when they do get into university, everything's online, they can't attend classes. So it's going to be very difficult, isn't it, for this generation to achieve those educational outcomes that they would have hoped to.
It's the COVID graduates, high school graduates and uni cohort. They were, you know, cheated out of a fun part of the life stage, of the life cycle. So that's a shame. So I would, though, expect that those guys prove that they are super resilient. These are tech savvy young people who are used to learning digitally. They will get the general gist of their degrees. They will get them. So it's not an uneducated, lost generation at all. What I would hope that the people that graduated high school or university this time around, I do hope that they, maybe enter the workforce in a couple of years. And then after 2 or 3 years of working, just take a year off. Do the gap year in your mid to later 20s. You know, really, if you're not settled down at this stage in your life just yet, travel abroad. You have money, hopefully, if you worked and put a bit of money to the side, and get these experiences. Because these experiences of traveling overseas, of meeting new people, they are also those indirect benefits, those indirect skills, like the theater classes, that are not immediately visible in a career, but they do make a difference. These are the things that set you apart from the people. If I'm a business major, everybody's a business major, make sure to do something bizarre on the side.
Bizarre.
Whether it's theater, whether it's, I don't know, some funky subject. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to do anything with anything. It can just be random, but it sets you apart. It shows you a different way of thinking.
Mm, okay, very good advice. Kylie from Lakemba has said, I love your guest, Indira. Couldn't agree more. I'm a careers advisor in a high school and I tell my students this all the time. Go Simon. So Kylie is agreeing with you, Simon. Another comment here from Greg. Hi, Indira. My daughter studied drama at high school and at uni. She now heads the communications department of an international company. There you go. So it shows that, there is some evidence here that drama is giving people this sort of leg up, Simon, that you talk about. Now, Simon, the other thing that I wanted to ask you about, you said that this was your little tease for me about chatting to you tonight. What can the cereal aisle in the supermarket tell us about the future of doing business in Australia? The cereal aisle. I'm fascinated.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. This is what I was talking about, the hollowing out of the workforce. How do we react as businesses to a workforce where more and more people have a lot of money and more people have an awful, have very little money, where the shrinking middle class is visible? And if we step into the cereal aisle of your local supermarket, the benchmark middle class breakfast in Australia is a box of Weet-Bix. They will set you back 42 cents per 100 gram, the big box.
Right.
And how did the cereal aisle react to an Australia where more and more people watch carefully every single dollar that they spend? Well, a whole new product category emerged. That's the Aldi end of the spectrum, the home brand, the black and gold end of the spectrum, where we create, the wheat biscuits, the off-brand.
Yeah, the generic.
And they usually are sold at a 50% discount, 38, 39 cents per 100 grams. So it's heaps cheaper. And the premise, the market premise here is pretty obvious. We offer you the same utility, a Wheaty breakfast, at a lower price. Same utility, lower price. But what happens at the other end of the cereal aisle, at the Paris end of the cereal aisle? Well, there's a whole new series of products emerging as well. Weet-Bix protein that makes you stronger. Weet-Bix organic, it's good for the planet. Weet-Bix kids, I'm sure it's good for something as well. But those products, they are three times as expensive per 100 gram, $1.20 thereabouts,
right,
than the standard Weet-Bix. And the premise here is, we offer you a higher utility, at a higher price. So as a business, you are harming yourself if you are just thinking that everybody wants Weet-Bix. For some people, affording Weet-Bix becomes a struggle. And for the top class, Weet-Bix is just a bit too bland, if you will. So you then need the nutty, gluten-free, super special Weet-Bix or something thereabouts. And this, of course, is not a point I want to make about breakfast cereals, because these are still cheap enough that even on a low income, you can afford Weet-Bix organic if you wanted to. The point here is that this Weet-Bix scale, the Weet-Bix spectrum, takes place in every industry. You have more and more people with high spending power, more and more people with low spending power. Where do you position yourself if you sell a product? In the market. You know, it's very easy to provide housing, for example, for the top end of the market. They have plenty of money. Easy. How do you provide housing to the low end of Australia? That's a big topic that is constantly being asked. And my very sad answer here is that the market doesn't provide for it, because the margins are tiny at the low end of the spectrum, at the generic home brand end of the spectrum, at the social housing end of the spectrum, the margins are tiny. So therefore, for example, in the housing one, I would hope that government acts more frequently as a developer, that therefore they, as government, adds housing stock to, you know, to benefit socially, you know, just poorer cohorts of the market.
Yeah. So you don't think the market is going to respond to get more affordable housing, which is the big crisis in Australia at the moment, at all? You don't think market's going to step in?
No, not at scale. If we see the vast amount of people on gig economy jobs that will be stuck in gig economy jobs as their income forever, you just don't earn enough that you will ever own a house. It doesn't work. And in expensive cities, even rent will take up a massive share of your income. And, you know, we roughly estimate you should pay about a third of your income for rent. That's not the case on a low income at all. You're easily on twice that.
Kids, study hard. Get those qualifications. Get that education.
Exactly, and that is the advice on an individual basis. So if we have a caller who asks what their son should be doing, the answer is quite straightforward. Get educated, because education actually pays. So it's easy enough. It's not too surprising. But on a societal level, this is much harder, because on a societal level, we really need to make sure that we push as many people as we humanly can from low-skilled gig economy jobs into those, shrinking middle-class jobs. And the good news is that the government is willing to create endless amounts of middle-skilled jobs through the infrastructure program. You know, whenever you build infrastructure, you create lots of middle-skilled, middle-income jobs, tradie jobs. And these kind of jobs are created through the TAFE system or through migration. And so the most important educational institution, societally speaking, that we have in Australia are our TAFEs. Mm. And our TAFEs must be universally free, because we must take all the hurdles away for lower income Australians to
get
enter
that
TAFE.
Education. Simon, thank you so much for chatting to us on Nightlife. You've got a lot of people very passionately interested in drama suddenly. Thanks a lot. Simon Kustenmaha, who's from the Demographics Group, a demographer who's been looking at what you should study, what the future of work is going to look like.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.